Well, welcome to the Missouri Freshman Association 2010 Candidate Forums. We're glad to have you here today. I'm David Lieb. I'm the correspondent with the Associated Press in Jefferson City, and I'll be moderating today. I want to go over a few ground rules before we get started. First, we'd like you to please hold your applause until the end of the debate. Please don't interrupt the candidates with either applause or boos or your feelings out loud. This debate will last till about 10:15. The candidates, right before we started, have drawn numbers for the order in which they will deliver their opening and closing statements. Tom Schweik drew number one, so he will go first, and Susan Monti drew number two. We will reverse that for their closing statements. I'll ask the first question, and then we'll open it up to questions for members of the audience, that is, people who are members of the Missouri Press Association or Working Press. If you have a question to ask, we would like you to make your way to this stationary microphone over here to my left and your right, and ask your question from there so that everyone can hear it. Please just identify yourself, say who you are, what organization you're with, and then ask your question. Candidates have 1 minute to answer each question with an opportunity for a 30-second rebuttal at my discretion, but we'll be generous with that, assuming that you would like that. There's a timekeeper in front for the candidates who have cards that say 1 minute, 30 seconds, 15 seconds, and stop. That's if you really don't stop. I think that should be it. So without any further ado, let's get started. Tom Schweik, you are first with your opening statement.
Thank you. Thank you, David. Thanks for everybody coming here today. My name's Tom Schweik. I don't know a lot of you, so what I thought I would do is give you a little bit about my background and then what my priorities would be if I had the honor of being elected Missouri State Auditor. I'm a fifth-generation Missourian from St. Louis County, roots all over the state, in Joplin, Moberly, all over the state. I am a graduate of St. Louis County Public Schools, Yale, Harvard Law School. I have a 25-year law practice of doing internal investigations, often with a very formal audit component. For private corporations, it's what I do for a living. I wrote a book in 1998, which some of you I know have read, called Protect Yourself from Business Lawsuits and Lawyers Like Me, which was a book about how businesses can avoid litigation, had a chapter on doing internal audits and investigations, and was a very good seller across the whole country. So I really kind of live, breathe, and eat anti-fraud, anti-crime, anti-corruption audits and investigations. I've been a federal prosecutor. I wrote a second book called Crash Proof Your Life, which was a book about living within your means. I think it's very important to have an auditor that's a fiscal conservative, and I've been writing about those subjects for over 8 years now when it wasn't fashionable to do so. I have been chief of staff to 3 UN ambassadors doing anti-fraud and anti-corruption work at the UN. I've served as an international law enforcement official at a high level, went to over 30 countries putting in anti-fraud and anti-corruption work, and was a special ambassador to Afghanistan doing anti-crime, anti-narcotics, and anti-corruption work in Afghanistan. When I came back to Missouri after serving our country, a lot of Republicans said, you know, you've been fighting crime, corruption, waste, fraud, and abuse for corporations. You've been doing it at the UN. You've been doing it around the world. You need to do it right here in Missouri. And I've never run for office before. They thought I would be very good. And so I entered the auditor's race. I was proud to win the primary. My priorities, if I have the honor of being elected by the people of Missouri, would be the federal stimulus money. Anytime there's a lot of money going through a system, you need to audit it very carefully, as well as discretionary audits of the school systems. Thank you.
Susan Monti.
Thank you, David. And thank you to the Press Association for hosting a forum about the auditor's office. And I appreciate all of you being here. And in 2006, I remember prepping for weeks and weeks and coming and having not all that many people here. So it is heartening to me to see that people will turn out to hear issues about the auditor's office, especially when it's so important in the economic times that we're facing. And, when I ran in 2006, I spent all of the time talking about what was necessary for this office, qualifications and experience, and I'm still doing that today. My approach is the same. I'm a 25-year CPA and a lawyer, and then I brought my small business background to the office to work out ways to make things more efficiently and do more with less, the way that everyone else out there is having to do in our state. I've reorganized the office. I've consolidated. We're sharing staff. We have one type of report. And it's allowed us to now do many, many more audits. In my first year, we did 91. Last year, we did 151. And this year, I'm already up to 124. We are getting everywhere that we can, and at the same time that we're doing the increased number of audits, we've been watching the stimulus money, something that is taking a huge toll on our resources in our office. 2 years ago, before the money started coming through the door, we had about 15,000 man hours involved in it. This year, we're up to 22,000 currently. We've got 55 of our 118-person staff working on it. We were involved in a pilot program, and I was the first Missouri official to make tracking the stimulus public information. We had it up on our website that day, and it continues on today. So my office has been on top of things ever since I've been there. I'm very proud of the work that we have done, and I plan on continuing that work over the next 4 years. Thank you.
Thank you. We're now ready for the question portion of our forum, and I'll ask the first question. Auditor Monti, I believe you were among the first Missouri Democrats to support President Barack Obama when he ran a couple years ago, and your office also was responsible for auditing a lot of federal money, including stimulus money, as you pointed out. Tom Schweik, your campaign has received at least $220,000 from Republican Lieutenant Governor Peter Kingsbury, and if elected, you would be responsible for auditing his office. So what I want to know is, how do your political connections influence your work? And how can the public be assured that you have provided a truly independent review of all your cases? Susan, this is first to you.
Thank you. I supported Barack Obama because of the vision that he was presenting of rising above the fray and having bipartisanship and being above party politics. That hasn't turned out to be the case in Washington, and it certainly isn't the case in Missouri. Although I will say that in my office, we have run our office in a bipartisan way, a nonpartisan way. I have worked with Democrats and Republicans across the board. I've audited Democrats and Republicans all over the place, and our approach from our office is the same, regardless of whether we've had a Democrat or Republican. I certainly have made friends and foes on both sides of the aisle. I have a four-year record that speaks for itself of the independence that our office has had. We've audited the legislature, we've audited the governor, and we're auditing administrations that are Democratic in nature all the time. And yet at the same time, I've been working with Republican lawmakers to change our authority, give us more things to do, and have gotten support across the board.
Thank you. Yeah, yes. And anyone who's read what I've written over the years has seen that I am frequently one who breaks with my party when I think they're wrong. I'm very fiercely independent-minded. I've always been that way, and we'll bring those characteristics to the auditor's office. I've also pledged to recuse myself from any audit directly involving one of my major contributors. So there will be no conflict of interest at all in my office. The problem on the other side is that the governor campaigns frequently with the current auditor, and it's almost impossible to recuse yourself from audits involving the governor because they're, you know, all of his appointees are across state lines. With respect to the stimulus money, I think there is a possible conflict of interest there. There was a letter that went out on political stationery by my opponent in February of this year that said there's nothing to criticize about the stimulus before the audit had been started. And I think that is indicative of possible conflict of interest or possible bias. So I pledge to be completely nonpartisan in this office. I've already proven the fact that I'll break with my party when it's right to do so, and I plan to bring those characteristics to the office. Thank you.
I think I can rebuttal on that. The letter that Mr. Schweik is referring to said we shouldn't be criticizing the stimulus should it have been done or shouldn't it have been done. At this point, that's a moot point. We don't have to talk about what is or isn't a right idea on something that's already passed. What we have to do is get beyond that stupid argument that rises up to should you or should you not and say, are the dollars being spent in the way they should be spent? That's what our office always has been doing. We've been doing it all the way through. There's no conflicts there. Plus, if you look at our website, since it's all that single audits are on there, you'll see that we have been heavily critical of the spending and subrecipient monitoring of the stimulus funds from the day we got money in the door.
Tom, would you like to rebuttal?
Well, first of all, I think the letter speaks for itself, and I don't think it said it had anything to do with just whether there should be a stimulus. It was my comments about it needs to be better audited, and the response was there's nothing there. Simply put, there's nothing there to criticize. So I am concerned about that. And I'm also concerned about the fact there are audits being released right now within the 30-day window before the election. Even Claire McCaskill didn't do that. I think that's also politically motivated. And so I do think there's a heavy politicization of the office right now, and I assure everybody here that won't occur when I'm the auditor.
Wow, do we have to have another rebuttal, or should we go to
the it is time for questions from the audience. I would invite members of the Press Association or the Working Press to make their way to the microphone if they have a question. And to give you time to do that, I'll go ahead and ask another question because you've actually touched on something that I was going to ask, and that is... Susan Montini, you have continued to release audits during the election season, and your predecessor, Claire McCaskill, suspended the release of audits in the final month before the election while seeking re-election in 2002 and while running for governor in 2004. So what I wonder is, what is the better approach? Continue to release audits year-round, even during the election, or suspend them in the day beforehand?
Well, in fact...
I have to ask the question first to Tom because it's his turn to go.
Oh, I'm going to answer that question?
I think he already did.
Well, sure. Well, I mean, I'll just go by what was reported in the media. My opponent said I may have front-loaded a few of them into the election cycle, and then when asked about that quote, said, well, I don't have control over how long something takes. That's a direct quote. Well, everybody who's managed knows, of course, you have control over how long something takes. That's what management's about. You put schedules and things in place. So that was a second incorrect statement. And then the third statement was, if I actually could control it in a way that makes political sense, I'd look into it. I think that's three ethical lapses in three sentences, and it should be a source of serious concern to the people of Missouri.
Okay, first of all, if I didn't release audits in the 30 days before the election, I should be accused of not doing my job. We put out 151 audits. Last year, we put out audits every single week. And the political position on not putting out audits is to say, because I'm running for office, I'm going to hold information that should be out there to the public. Now, the thing about front-loading is, you know, I had done, this was a political speech, and I had just got done saying, I'm doing everything the same way as I always have. And then I made a joke that said, maybe I'll front-load a few. It was looked at as a joke. Unfortunately, I am an accountant, and I've forgotten that I am not funny. However, I really don't have the ability to monitor exactly when things come out. I'm constantly telling my staff we need to get them out quicker and quicker. One of the concerns that we had in our office with peer review when people come in was the amount of time between when we start an audit and getting it out. We said we actually looked at this because Claire had made it a policy not when she ran for re-election to auditor, but when she ran for governor and senator, she didn't put out audits.
Well, my rebuttal is the words, again, just like the letter about nothing to criticize about the stimulus. They speak for themselves. The statement was, I may have front-loaded a few of them to the election cycle, and then I don't have control over how long something takes, which, of course, any good manager does. And then finally, if I could actually control it in a way that makes political sense, I'd look into it. I don't think it's a joke, and I don't think it's funny.
Susan, rebuttal again.
Mr. Schweik may not have a sense of humor either. However, the problem here is not about this statement or that statement. I have a four-year history here that everyone can look at in the way that we do our audits outside of political influence. The only times that I have held an audit or timed it differently was last year when I held the audit of the legislature until after the legislative cycle to keep it from becoming an issue while they were trying to deal with tough budget times. Because of that, I worked with the Republican leadership on doing it. I think you can look all across 4 years and see that we have held our office in an independent way. We don't have to quibble about what may be in this letter or someone's interpretation of my bad humor.
Thank you. We have a question from the audience, and we'll go there now.
Bob Watson from the Jefferson City News Tribune. Let's go back to a very basic thing. In most election years, when the auditor's office is up, most of the voters go home. So what both of you, what do you believe the auditor is supposed to be doing, and what do you think the people of Missouri least understand about the job you have?
This question goes first to Susan Monti.
Well, what we're supposed to be doing is auditing all of state government and auditing all of these local entities that we're responsible for, plus all of these other local entities that are bringing us in constantly on a petition basis to help them work through problems in their governmental entities and to make things better. What people don't understand is the actual functions of the office. My opponent and others have used the word auditing in a generic sense. What we do in our office isn't just looking over something. What we do in our office is audit opinions that are only able to be done by statute by certified public accountants. This is not just coming in and saying, oh, I've done some investigative work and so I can look at all this stuff and understand what's going on. We have specific standards that we have to follow, and the things that we do in our office are very, very technical, and technical in a way that requires a certified public accountant. That is the thing that people expect out of the office and should understand that that is the qualification needed in this office.
The duty of the auditor is to root out fraud, waste, abuse, corruption in state government. That's 200 agencies, boards, and commissions, over 40 judicial circuits, 89 counties that don't have their own auditor. And you do that not only by looking at the numbers, but also through management and performance audits, which I think the current auditor does, as well as all the way back to Kit Bond. Now, on this CPA issue, my opponent said in 2006 that you don't have to be a CPA to be auditor. That's when Claire McCaskill was running, and she was an auditor. Kit Bond was not a CPA. John Ashcroft was not a CPA. I thought they did an excellent job as auditor. What you need is management skill, tenacity, and the ability to root out fraud, waste, abuse, and corruption. The office has 50 CPAs, and they're very important to have in that office. But the idea that you have to be a CPA to be auditor runs contrary to her own mentor's statements, her own statements in the past, and the excellent performance by non-CPAs in that job for many, many years.
We'll allow some time for rebuttal on the point of should the auditor be a certified public accountant.
Correct. It is incorrect to say that I thought that you could not be a CPA when Claire ran. In fact, when Claire stopped running in 2006 and told me to run, she says, well, you're always complaining because I'm not a CPA. Step up to the plate. So I've always said you should be a CPA in the office. 100% of our management and executive staffs are CPAs. And while there may have been some room for other things in the past, we have seen accountant abuse, and we saw a lot of changes in the accounting profession. In 2007, when I became the auditor, was the first year that the new GAO Yellow Book standards came out. We operate under very, very technical rules, and even if you could say you could get by in the past, you can't get by now.
In 2006, there was actually a proposal to require that the auditor be a CPA, and my opponent actively opposed that. So we have another political flip-flop for expedient purposes going on here. And then the second point I would make is in my law practice, I did a lot of government contract work and audits and investigations involving government contracting, which involved extensive dealings with the cost accounting standard in the federal government, as well as the law that has to be applied to that, which brings my legal anti-corruption background into it. Margaret Kelly, who was a three-term Missouri State Auditor, said, I am exceptionally well qualified for this job. And I think that suggests that somehow I'm not qualified is that's humorous to me.
Now, I do want to say,
Susan,
on the 2000...
Susan, I don't really have a procedure for rebuttal. So we'll move on to the next question.
Well, would you ask a question about that, please?
I'll tell you what, I have a question I'm going to ask. I don't know if it is exactly what you were hoping for. But others are welcome to ask questions, too. Someone mentioned Margaret Kelly. So what I'd like to know is, if elected, would you pledge to serve a full four-year term? Or are you open to running for higher office midway through your term, as Claire McCaskill did in 2004, as Margaret Kelly did in 1996? This question goes first to you, Tom.
Yes, I would serve out my four-year term completely.
First, I'd like to answer that other question really quick, and I'm going to come to it. In 2006, I actually was not the auditor, and I was always saying you should be a CPA. And when the CPA Society came to me and said, would you actively support our cause to change the legislation to have a requirement of a CPA, I said yes. And being the only CPA in Jefferson City at the time, clearly, I was the only voice out there for them. So I really don't know where that comes from. Of course I would serve out my four-year term. I'm the only one up on this table who got up one morning and said, I'd like to be the state auditor. In fact, Mr. Schweik, toyed around with playing a different race until they took him in a back room and put him into this one. So then, when asked about it, he wavered on whether he would serve out this term, saying that he would if everybody got behind him, and otherwise all bets were off. Well, everybody didn't get behind him, so I'm glad to hear that he would pledge that now, because this office is much too important to step in and then try to run for something immediately, something that we did see out of Kit Bond.
Would you like to rebuttal on the bathroom deal?
I am very. I haven't spent my entire adult life rooting out fraud, waste, abuse, and corruption. I like doing investigations. I like doing audits. I'm very excited about the job. I will serve out a four-year term. I think people will see a new level of energy and tenacity because I have a law enforcement background, which my opponent does not. That creates additional tenacity, ability to root out fraud more effectively, and I think people, if I have the honor of being elected, will be very happy a year from now when they see the kind of results they'll get from my office.
Are you going to give me another one?
No.
I thought maybe you were
waiting. Okay. Question from the audience.
Hi, I'm Dane Burnett from the Elgin Advertiser. Under the current audit process, prior to the very end of the audit, there is a closed-door meeting with those entities that are being audited. And I know specifically in the county audits, you meet with the county commissioner to discuss the preliminary results. Do you think that is a good process, especially in our open democratic process today, and would you like to see that continue personally?
Question goes first to Susan Monti.
Yes, it is. It is a really good process, and here's the process that we follow. We go in and we do the work and bring together an audit report that comes to me. We then, go through it, fine-tune it, and then we sit down with whoever it may be. At the county level, it's the county commissions. We want to go through it with them and make sure that there isn't things that we've missed or that we're presenting it in a way that may not be actually correct. So it is a closed meeting to allow us to take something that is still a work in progress. Because the real goal when we do this is to work towards meaningful change. We, in doing this and allowing them to come in and say, we don't think this is quite in the right light, and can you shape it so that we can all come up with the same issue and deal with it in a responsible way, we get a lot more change, and we get a lot more people complying with our recommendations, something that can't be done if you come in with a, gotcha attitude or maybe a law enforcement type perspective.
Well, in this case, the current auditor and I can agree on this issue. I've done a lot of internal investigations and audits. When I was in the federal government, I was subject to audits frequently. And I think it is important when an outsider comes into an organization that they're not the expert in and looks at the books and the records, the management practices, the legal compliance issues that you do in an audit, it's important to meet with the people before you release the audit and say, now, do you think we've missed anything? We want your input. We don't want this to be a gotcha type of an attitude. We want to make sure this audit is an accurate reflection of the issues here. Now, sometimes they'll make statements that are not true, and you'll leave it in the audit, but there have been situations where I've changed audits that I've done based on legitimate input into the quality of the work that we've done, and there's other situations where you don't. But I do think you need to give the subject of the audit an opportunity to look at the findings, conclusions, and recommendations, because the purpose of an audit is not to make headlines or to hurt people or to cause people lose their jobs, which sometimes can be the outcome of a bad audit. So you really want to make sure all the I's were dotted, all the T's were crossed, and you've been very effective in the audit process. So I would agree with the current auditor on that issue.
Okay, we have another question from the audience.
Yes, my name is Michael Mazzoli. I'm with KRFS Radio here in Osage Beach. excuse me. With what you were just talking about, you have 118 staff, you have 96 counties that can't do their own audits, and those audits that you guys do are infrequent, and those years that you guys don't audit, problems escalate. Wouldn't it be better strategy to eliminate some of your staff and actually get past the county class issue, require counties to have auditors?
Okay, this question goes first to Tom Schweik.
Well, it's a good question if there are counties that are not being audited, but I think the basic role of the auditor in terms of reducing staff, I don't think would be a good idea. You've got $5 billion worth of stimulus money coming in the state. You need all the help you can get to make sure that that intense pressure to get that money out the door is effectively audited. If there are problems in individual counties, of course, a certain percentage of the voters can sign a petition and force an audit to be done. And I think that's really the proper recourse in the event that there's a county where people do not believe there's effective processes, controls, or if there's corruption or waste. I mean, if enough people feel that, you can sign a petition. And there are a lot of petition audits that get done, and I would look forward to doing that.
Susan Monti.
The county auditors don't serve as an auditor in the sense. They are the chief budget officer, so it wouldn't help take care of the problem to have more county auditors. Here's what we have done in our office. When we came in, we come in once every 4 years to do these 89 counties. On the off cycle, on the other two-year time, the counties were out on their own to try to get an accountant in the door to do their financial statements. What we have done is because of this issue and the inefficiencies of us following someone's work and them following their our work, we have partnered with the counties and broken off the financial statement part of the county audits for those small counties. We partnered with the counties. We now bid it out through OA so that it is two separate audits. We pay half the cost. The county pays their cost. What we have found is we have freed up individuals to go and do other work. We have a 20% cost savings because we have CPA firms doing just one piece of it. And the counties have seen a cost saving as well. And because we are controlling it, we can make sure that they are getting interim advice that is helping with some of these issues that you're talking about. So it's been a wonderful, successful program for us, and we're very proud of it.
Okay. Let me pose another question to you about local government. There was at some time a fairly comprehensive audit about how local governments were complying with the state sunshine law, the open records, the open meetings law. Do you have any concerns that local governments are not appropriately complying with this law, and do you think it might be time for a comprehensive audit on how they are? So this question goes first to Susan Monti.
I think so, and I think if you look at the audit report that we put out earlier this year, we did a compilation. We pulled all of the different Sunshine Law violations together and put them in one place so you can see the kinds of things that are occurring. I think it is time to look at this in a harder way. I think it's also time to look and see exactly what types of things are occurring that are within the law but aren't within the spirit of the law, and maybe we need some changes there as well. I put out the final report of the Northeast Fire Protection District this week, where they weren't keeping any closed minutes, and it's technically not required, so they said, well, we're just not going to do it. The amount of information in the open minutes was so small that you could barely tell what actually happened at the meeting, and their response is, if people want to know what's going on at the meeting, they should come to the meeting. Well, they're technically complying with the law, but clearly it is not the transparency that we are looking for. That, and the biggest thing that we find out there in all of our local governments, is the reason we keep getting petitioned in, and we've had way more petitions than there used to be in the past, is because local governments are not complying with Sunshine Law.
Yeah, and again, I think I concur mostly with what the current auditor says about that issue. When I did a lot of work on the federal level, you have the Freedom of Information Act, which is analogous, and there was always a battle between the government. I was on both sides of it at different times, trying to get information and trying to have information gotten from me. There's always a battle where the government entity tries to keep as much confidential as possible, and the public wants to get as much as possible. And I think there should always be – you should always err on the side of disclosure. If that means that legislative changes are required to force these – entities to release more information, that should occur. But more often than not, it's a question of who's taking down the notes and who's releasing the minutes. So, yeah, I think it would be a good idea to do a comprehensive audit of that and make sure the people of Missouri get the information they're entitled to.
Okay. Bill, good question.
Bill Miller, Washington, Missouri. Probably only maybe one in 100 Missourians know right now who the state auditor is. Maybe one 500 might know who the calendar is. Apparently, both of you are running a very low budget type of campaign, haven't seen much advertising, but obviously you have some funds, and I would like to know who is funding your campaigns.
Right, that question goes first to Tom Schweik.
Well, today we're going to release a mandatory financial disclosure report, which will list in excruciating detail exactly who's funding the campaign. Dollar by dollar, I think everything $100 or over has to be reported, so you will get a complete and comprehensive list of that. Most of the people funding my campaign are from the private sector. They know I have a private sector background. They're pro-business. They're not pro-government. They believe in small government and accountable government, and so they're financing my campaign. There are others, though. I mean, there's a wide variety of people. My opponent is financed mostly by trial lawyers and unions. And so there's just a difference in philosophy. I mean, my philosophy is one where you trust the private sector and business, and that's why I get funding from them. And my opponent's is you trust the trial lawyers and you trust the unions, and that's why she gets most of her funding from them. So it's kind of – the funding indicates a philosophical difference in the approach to auditing, too, I think, which is relevant. Thank you.
Well, I definitely think the funding is a philosophical difference because after the 30-day report we had put together, you know, your how many contributors you actually had in your itemized statements, and Mr. Swike had 247 for $1.2 million, and I had 1,361 for $850,000. So there's definitely a huge difference. He has taken $10,000 checks routinely. Peter Kinder gave a $100,000 check and a $120,000 check. I think that you'll find that over half of my contributions are under $50. So we definitely have, and believe me, there are not 1,300 trial lawyers in this state with money. And the unions don't have the money either. So it isn't the same type of funding spectra that you can say, oh, the Democrats get all their money here and the Republicans get all their money here. It isn't like that at all. I get checks from all over the place, very small ones, but it isn't about the money. It's never been about the money. It is about the office and trying to do the job. And primarily, my approach to this whole campaign is just to go out and do my job the same way I've done it for the last 4 years.
The numbers she presented on how many contributors are inaccurate. You don't have to report contributions of under $100. I've gotten so many $5 and $10 contributors. A lot of them don't want to be listed on a report, and they're not required to by law. I mean, dozens if not hundreds of them. So my numbers are very different. I just don't report those people who don't want under $100 who don't want their name reported. So I have all kinds of small contributors. She just received a $25,000 check from a plaintiff's personal injury firm. And quite frankly, when she's talking about my $10,000 checks and some of the other large checks that people have given me, I know she's approached some of those people for money, and they've simply decided to give the money to me instead, and it's sort of sour grapes.
Yeah. That would be it, because I have all kinds of friends with $10,000 checks. The answer here is that we should have campaign limits. We shouldn't be talking about $100,000 checks and $50,000 checks and $10,000 checks. I hesitate to even think of how bad this is going to be next cycle when we've got all of these races out there. But this is the first cycle that we've had with both the primary and the general without any kind of campaign contribution limits. And the kind of checks that are flowing through this time ought to make us all just go, what is going on here? This is not the way that we ought to be running our democracy.
All right. Go ahead. Question from the audience.
Good morning. I'm Frank Martin with the Daily Quill in West Plains. I'd like to ask Susan, when you approached the office, what, if anything, did you see that needed to be changed in the nature of the execution or the process of the office, different than what the way your predecessors had run the office? What did you do about those things, if anything, and how satisfied are you? Mr. Schweitzer, I would like to ask you, looking from the outside, the same questions about the nature the process of the office as you see it from the outside and what you might do to change it, if you think it needs change. I'm sure you do.
Okay, this question goes first to Susan Monti.
Okay, thank you. I'm proud to be able to talk about the things that we changed in the office. When I came in, we had a structure that had four different divisions, and it was very inefficient and difficult to work with. Claire McCaskill had set up kind of a separate branch to do a lot of performance audits. None of them were integrated into the mix. And as I alluded to earlier, things changed. The standards that we work by all change. There's no such thing as a financial audit without performance measures in it. Everything should have been streamlined and consolidated into one group. I took the four divisions down to three, one of which is quality control. So it's really only two different audit divisions. We share resources. sources now, as one issue, as one group gets too busy, we can move people over. All of our audit reports now are the same format, and we have been able to do many more audits with less resources, and we've had to. We net have six less people now working for us because we've had budget cuts as well. So had we not done the structural changes, we wouldn't have been able to keep up with where we are right now.
That's right.
Thank you. You know, one of the most important rules of management is you don't recommend wholesale changes to an organization until you've been in it and you've spoken to the people. I managed the U.S. mission to the United Nations. I managed a 4,000-person bureau at the U.S. State Department. I've managed large litigation claims and projects and audits. And you go in and you talk to people. And so the first thing you do is you say, what would you change? What do you think is working and what don't you think is working? Since I'm not the current auditor, I think it would be presumptuous of me to say I'm going to go in like a bull in a china shop and reorganize this and change that. And you have to talk to the people first. But a few observations I have, which are things I would consider subject to talking to the staff there first, would be increased audits of school districts. These are within the discretion of the auditor. There's also discretion for the auditor to audit state officials rather than just on the once every 2-year cycle. Maybe in this cycle, with everything going on in the country, it might be better to do more of those. And the other I'm interested in, and maybe the current auditor can answer that, is before she came in, there was about $3,000 to $5,000 a year spent outsourcing audits. Now it's up to $800,000 a year worth of audits are outsourced to private firms. Could create conflicts of interest, obviously creates issues of supervision and control. I would have a serious look at whether that's really the most efficient and effective use of our resources.
Would you like some rebuttal about the outsourcing audits?
Yeah, I would. That's the county initiative that I referred to earlier. We audit 89 counties. All of this work now goes to these CPA firms that are doing the financial statement. We still are auditing the counties on a 4-year basis, but we've taken our portion of the financial statement and the county's portion. We put them together, we pay for it, and then we bill back the county. So the numbers are actually overstated. But this has been a wonderful program, and I would look for other ways to make that happen. Let me just say one thing about the school districts, because I'm very proud of that. The Republican-led legislature gave us authority to do school districts just 1 year ago, and we are currently doing the Kansas City, Missouri school district under that authority. And I'm very proud of the work that we're doing on that.
No.
Good morning. My name is Dave Bradley. I'm from the St. Joseph News Press. And this year, I think we have a $23 billion budget for the state government. We're looking at a shortfall of what they heard this morning. They talked about $500 million, the $700 million shortfall. We have 70 new lawmakers probably coming in, at least 70. Is there anything you all could do in your office to help our legislators figure out where there isn't waste in this $23 billion budget to help them come up with some ideas on where we could squeeze the bucks so we could fund the essential services for Missouri?
This question goes first to Tom Schweik.
Well, I think it's a really important question because the state budget has been propped up over the past couple of years with stimulus money that was intended to be a job-creating endeavor. And really what it's done is it's just sort of extended the cliff so that now we're on the edge of the abyss and we're going to, you know, once that money runs out, it's going to be a serious problem for the people of Missouri, and it's given people an excuse not to address the problems up front. The auditor can come in and point to where efficiencies are required, and I think that, you know, I will do a lot of that to show how we can eliminate some of that shortfall. But as a fiscal conservative who is totally debt averse in my personal life and my business and in everything else, to see us relying on the stimulus money not to create jobs but simply to prolong the inevitable is very, very problematic for me. And I will bring a certain spirit of strong fiscal conservatism to the office and hope that the legislature will have that same spirit of strong fiscal conservatism to cut the budgets in a way, and the governor too, of course, in a way that will bring us back into balance, because it's very, very dangerous where we are right now. But the auditor really can only keep doing very aggressive, tenacious audits and trying to reduce the cost of government to the taxpayer.
Well, one of the things I'm proud of that we have done is we've worked really hard to try to make sure that the legislature understands what's going on in our office. Prior to my coming in, you know, we had our audits there, but no one would even know when they were coming out. We now send email alerts, and the thing that we have done for the legislature every year is we have taken all of our recommendations to the General Assembly, put them together in one package, and sent it over to them on a yearly basis. So we're trying to keep them as much in the loop as we can as to what's going on. As for the budget, this is something I'm very concerned about. I actually agree with Mr. Swike that we can't plug the holes in the budget with the stimulus money and think that things are going to get better. That's why we keep talking about things on the revenue side of the equation that need to be reevaluated. We've got tax credits out there that we're not even tracking. When the legislature looked at the fiscal notes as to what they thought was going to happen 5 years ago and what actually happened, they were off by $1 billion. In the meantime, in the two-year period between last time and this time, the number of tax exemptions went up from 117 to 131, and we don't even know how much it's going to be. We have to control things on the revenue side as well as the expenditure side if we're going to get through this.
Yeah, just briefly on the tax credit issue. My only concern about the current auditor's approach to tax credit was when the governor said we need to stop these tax credits, like within a nanosecond, she jumped in and said that's right before we'd really audited it. And as she said, we need to get the information to determine if those tax credits are generating revenue or if they're costing the taxpayer money. So you can't prejudge the system, but I do agree you need to do a thorough analysis of the tax credits and then make a recommendation as to whether they're effective.
I would like to say that, you know, I had done the tax credit audit, and the governor's office didn't even call us and tell us they were having a press conference that day. It actually was just pretty good timing for us to put out an audit, and it wasn't a statement that said anything about it. It was an actual audit of the fiscal note process. We've been auditing all of the tax credits as we go along and had a lot of concerns with them. In fact, our office, for the first time in Missouri history, won the National State Auditors Association Excellence in Accounting for our audit of the low-income housing tax credit. So we have been very diligent in saying we have to get the best bang for our buck on these tax credits.
Okay. Our time is nearly out, so I'm going to ask one last question, and then we'll be closing statements. This question goes first to Tom Schweik, but what I'd like to know is, if elected, what would be the very first thing, the number one program that you think needs to be audited?
Well, again, having not been in the office, the first thing I would do is talk to my staff and say, what do you think the number one program is that needs to be audited? But from the outside, it sure looks like Medicaid is a priority. Anything getting stimulus money is a priority, and school districts would be a priority. But I would talk to them and say, you know, where do you see the issues and the problems? And then I would go forward at that point.
Well, we have an audit plan that's constantly changing and evolving because things come up and we try to get them into the plan. School districts is a good example. We had told the Springfield School District that we couldn't get to them for a year because of limited resources and the size of the district. They went ahead and circulated petitions. Now we are doing the Springfield School District on petition instead of on the state dollar. So that now is started and had to move five or six different audits back. So we don't say this is the number one issue. Our number one issue is that I have listed out all of the places that we couldn't get to, and I have been trying to work them in. We had the court systems that we hadn't been to some of the circuits for 15 to 20 years. That was part of the impetus behind taking the municipal courts and moving them out of the state group and moving them over to local, because the real priority here is to getting to the places that have more risk in them. And we, with the resources we have, it is so, so difficult to do that.
Okay. We're now ready for the closing statements, and I'll remind each of you have 2 minutes for these. Susan, you are first. Go ahead.
All right. Well, thanks again. I'm telling you what, I appreciate that the questions really did talk about auditing. Sometimes we go to these forums and people are asking you so many questions that don't have the technical aspects. And the reason that I appreciate that so much is because I do believe that unlike most of the other political offices out there, this office is one that should be looked at in a different way. That is the approach that I have always taken to it. It is a professional CPA firm, and the work that we do is just not the type of work that should be determined based on somebody's political whims. The work that we do rises above that. I've tried to run the office above that in all times, and I'm running my campaign above that. I do not think that campaigns should be the nasty, dirty, ugly things that we have seen over the last, not just this cycle, but the cycle before. I believe that there is a duty for those of us who are running for office to talk about the issues that make the office important. And I'm going to do that through this campaign the way that I did it in 2006. The office is one that shouldn't be taken lightly. It is an office that will make a ton of difference in these tough economic times. I think you can see that through the work that I have done over the last 4 years. I have been very, very proud to serve as your Missouri State Auditor. The work that we do stands for itself. The people that I have working for me are incredible people that have been there through 20, 25, and 30 years. And we hold ourselves in a light that is outside of the political realm, and I'm going to continue to do so. I appreciate that you all showed up tonight, today, and since we were kind of the undercard in the warm-up act, it is really heartening that you came to the room. Thank you so much.
That's right.
Again, thank you all for hosting this debate. It's the only one we'll have, and I really appreciate the opportunity to speak to so many of you in one place at one time. You know, I've never run for office before. I didn't even run for, like, class president in high school or student council in college. I have literally never had my name on a ballot until this election cycle. So I'm brand new to politics, and I really wasn't sure what to expect, you know, when I got into it. And most of it's been very gratifying. Now, there's some political battles that go on that sometimes make me wish I'm back in Afghanistan, but for the most part, I've been very gratified to work and meet with the people in Missouri. You see some really interesting and fun things. I once saw somebody texting on a horse, which was new for me. And you also hear people who are really concerned and worried about the state of the state and their own well-being. They need an auditor who's tough, tenacious, has anti-fraud, anti-corruption, anti-crime experience that will really go to the mat for them because they're worried. They're worried about the future of our state, the future of services, the future of their jobs. And I'm happy to go into the fray, enter politics for the first time, and try to make a difference in their lives. And that's really the only reason I'm running. I enjoy public service, and I'd like to do it in Missouri. Thank you.
Thank you for coming. Now would be the time to applaud.